Welcome to Ringside with Eric Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Avalanche beat writer for ColoradoHockeyNow.com, podcaster here at Mile High Sports, coming to you Friday, January 10th, to go over two games that the Avalanche just played. I am sandwiched right in the middle of a back-to-back and a massive game on Saturday, once again, against the Winnipeg Jets. The Avalanche came out on Wednesday, facing off against the bad Chicago Blackhawks team with Trent Miner in goal, and only got one goal, and it was a beauty of a play from Juuso Parsonen, going end-to-end, backhand, top shelf, very Matt Duchene-esque type of backhand, or Sidney Crosby type of backhand, up and over Peter Mrazek, and that was the only shot the Avalanche could get past the Blackhawks goalie against a team that has struggled all season, and against a goalie that hadn't won since early November and has been having a pretty bad season. So that's Peter Mrazek. And then they come out the very next night and they defeat the Winnipeg Jets. I'm so sorry. They defeat the Minnesota Wild 6-1 on the road against a Wild team that, let's face it, the Avalanche had to beat. And they had to beat them the way they did because the Minnesota Wild were missing all three of their top defensemen, Jonas Brodin, Jared Spurgeon, and Brock Faber, as well as their MVP caliber forward and superstar left winger, Kirill Kaprizov. It was very reminiscent of those games. You know, there was a game against Boston early in the season where the Avalanche were just so insanely, disgustingly injured. There was a game against, coincidentally, also Boston back in the 22-23 season where the top line was Mikko Rantanen centering Alex Newhook and Charles Hudon from how badly the Avalanche were injured. Those are the games that the Avalanche, you know, they went into them knowing we're going to lose this one, and they did. You know, they got shut out in that 2022-23 season, that game against the Bruins 4-0. They lost to the Bruins earlier this season. Granted, that game went a little better. Moral of the story, that was the type of game for the Minnesota Wild. If you're an Avalanche fan, are you feeling sorry for them? No, probably not, because you've been dealing with this for the last 2-3 seasons. But for the Minnesota Wild, you went into that game thinking, this is going to be a tough one, all things considered, to kind of come away with a win in. So that's the gist of what's happened over the last week. Let's kind of get into the breakdown of this season. Of this back-to-back, because this is precisely, you know, winning one, losing one is kind of precisely what you had, you know, what you expect out of a team going into a back-to-back. For the Avalanche, it kind of felt like they let an opportunity get away from them, because had they beat the Blackhawks, which is a team that you expect to beat, Minnesota might be the game you expect to lose, but had you beat the Blackhawks and then woken up the next day to find out Minnesota's missing their top three minute-munching defensemen, as well as Kirill Kaprizov, who obviously has been missing for a while, and they're also missing Luko from the bottom six, Marc-Andre Fleury had an illness, but you know, those are not as important as those top four pieces I mentioned. You had an opportunity to come away with 4 points. Are you sitting here feeling terrible about it? No, you're not. The Avalanche, they had a six-game winning streak. I believe they're 8-1-1 in their last 10 games now. And, you know, outside of a, you know, meh performance against the Montreal Canadiens where you lost in the shootout, as well as this loss against the Chicago Blackhawks, you've ultimately, other than that, you've been pretty damn good. You are, you know, you had a six-game winning streak. You followed it up with a 2-1-1 stretch, and the two wins, letting in one goal each game, came against the Florida Panthers and the Minnesota Wild. These are two of the best teams in the NHL. The losses, like I said, you had one goal against Chicago, and you also only had one goal against the Montreal Canadiens in a game where you gave up the lead in the third period. So take the six-game winning streak, add the 2-1-1, you're 8-1-1 in your last 10 games. You're 9-2-1 since Mackenzie Blackwood made his debut on December 14. So you were at a point this season. I mean, you entered that game in Detroit, the one that I covered on the road on December 7, with a 14-13 record. And if you lose to the Red Wings, you're at 500. Now you're sitting comfortably 10 games above 500. That's what a 9-2-1, that's what an 8-1-1, that's what these types of stretches can do for a team. That Red Wings game started a three-game winning streak. Then you lost 2 of 3. Then you've been 8-1-1 since. So solid bit of hockey from the Avalanche. Are you going to complain about losing that Blackhawks game, you know, for a day? But in the end, it was game number 42, plenty of season left and plenty of opportunities to come back and win this division and to, you know, get back in the thick of things with these other teams, especially given the fact that you got Winnipeg and then you got the Rangers and the Oilers, and then you got three games in a row, all of them at home at Ball Arena. Dallas, Minnesota, Winnipeg. This is a massive stretch for the Avalanche. Outside of those games against the Rangers and the Oilers, well, the Oilers kind of, but outside of the game against the Rangers, the other games don't really have much playoff implications. Edmonton, the only way that one would have a playoff implication is if you're looking at, you know, possibly playing the Oilers in the third round and who's going to have home ice advantage. But if you're the Avalanche, you're a team that historically over the last couple of years tends to have a pretty strong ending to the season. In 2023, the Avalanche had 21 wins at the 41 game mark, and they ended up with 51. They won 30 of their last 41. Last season was a little bit more balanced. You had 26 at the halfway mark, and then you ran into a few ruts, and you ended the season, I believe, with precisely 50 wins after you beat the Edmonton Oilers in the last game of the season. So that was more of a half and half year. The biggest difference between last year and this year, last year you were 19-6-6 on the road. Granted, in the playoffs, you were a lot better, but you were 19-6-6 on the road. This year, you've played 22 road games, so you just passed the halfway mark. You've already got 14 wins. You're 14-8. So big homestand coming up, big stretch of hockey coming up. But before that, obviously, let's look back at these last two games. I'm going to start with the Minnesota game because that's the one that's going to give you, there's a lot more to talk about there. Also, you know, full disclosure, you've probably noticed on ColoradoHockeyNow.com, the Chicago game was my off day from writing. Colleen Flynn handled the post-gamer. She handled the daily the next day and all that. So here's what we got from the game against the Minnesota Wild. Mackenzie Blackwood faced 25 shots, made 24 saves, has officially reached the 920 save percentage mark. This is a goalie that joined the Avalanche with a 9-11 save percentage and has been outstanding ever since he joined this team. So when you combine that with the fact that, one, Filip Gustavsson started the game with a 922 but let in six goals, I believe on 27 shots, I want to say, his 922 save percentage dropped down to a 918. So now what you have at the top of the NHL ranks, you have Anthony Stolarz with a 927 save percentage. You have Connor Hellebuck with a 926 save percentage. Tied in third and fourth. Well, Mackenzie Blackwood's a little bit above by like a 0.00 something percentage, but both sitting at 920 in third and fourth. Mackenzie Blackwood and Darcy Kemper, who has been incredible for the LA Kings and really turned his season around. Man, that's a trade that really worked for both teams, undoing the fact that the LA Kings got completely jobbed by the Winnipeg Jets in that deal for Pierre-Luc Dubois. They went ahead and shifted him to the Washington Capitals, traded him there for Darcy Kemper, who was struggling with the Caps. And you now have Kemper in a better situation, and you have Dubois in a better situation. Darcy Kemper, 22 wins with the Capitals his first season. Last year, only 13 wins because Charlie Lindgren took the starting role and ran with it. This year, he's already up to 11. In fact, he's 11-2-5. Five OT / shootout losses. That is brutal. You win even two or three of those, and your record looks a hell of a lot shinier with like a 14-2-2. Regardless, Darcy Kemper's having a great season. You know, at 5-on-5, when those games and the final buzzer is sounding, he's got 11 wins, two losses, and five times he's been tied with the other team. He's got a 920 save percentage. He's got two shutouts. So he's been awesome. But let's talk about the guy that's still here, not the guy that's gone. Mackenzie Blackwood, 920 save percentage. I wrote this a couple of weeks ago in the Monday notebook. People thought I was crazy, but I'm going to stand by it. I'm going to continue to ask this question until we get to the end of the regular season in April. What is it going to take for Mackenzie Blackwood to be included in the Vezina Trophy conversation? Because he is a player that is catapulting his way up the list. He is a player that the Avalanche are surely going to ride throughout the season, especially depending on how Scott Wedgwood looks like coming out of his injury, and if he can continue to give you consistent play as a backup goalie, you're going to play Blackwood in all of your big games. You're going to ride this guy. He's got 14 wins on the season, but more importantly, he's 8-1-1 with the Avalanche. The Avalanche have played 43 games. They have 39 remaining. If Blackwood starts 29 of the 39, which kind of sounds crazy, but it is genuinely possible, or let's say 27 of the 39. If Blackwood starts 27 of the 39 games and wins 20 of those 27, which again, you might think is a ton of games or a ton of wins, but again, he's 8-1-1. If he wins 20 of the games he starts, whether it's 27 or 29, he will have 34 wins on the season. He's been a 940 with the Avalanche just to get him back up to 920. If he regresses from a 940 to a 920 with the Avalanche, where he already is, that means in my scenario that I'm creating from my brain right now, that obviously is not something you can predict, Mackenzie Blackwood would end the regular season with 34 wins, a 920 save percentage, probably a division title given the fact that he would win the Avalanche 20 more games on his own, let alone the fact that the backup goalie is probably going to win some games as well. Again, these are all hypothetical scenarios. But the Avalanche are at 26 wins. If Blackwood wins you 20 more, that gets you to 46. And if that saves 12 games for the backup goalie, and if the backup goalie wins six of those games, that's going to get you to 52 wins. You're going to be sitting pretty nicely in the standings, whether you're first or second in the Central Division. You're probably going to be a top three team in the Western Conference, just given the way that things are shaking out. And you're looking at a possibility that Mackenzie Blackwood is, if not first, then probably top two, three, four in wins, and top 1, 2, 3 in save percentage. So I'm going to ask that question again and again throughout the regular season. What is it going to take for Mackenzie Blackwood to be in that Vezina Trophy conversation? Because from when I asked it until now, all he's done is win games outside of that shootout loss to the Montreal Canadiens where he only let in one goal. Blackwood, in his past six games since the extension, has been lights out. He's given up seven goals. In his first four starts with the Avalanche, you guys probably remember me writing about this, tweeting about this, putting this in my podcast every time I recorded. His first four games, he let in two goals per game, and then he goes out, coming out of the Christmas holiday, signs that big contract extension. Everybody's wondering what the hell are the Avalanche doing, and all he's done since then is give up one goal, then two, then one, then one, then one, then one. One of those ones that I just listed out of the last four was the game against the Buffalo Sabres where he came in relief and only played 19 minutes, faced like four shots and let in a goal. Sure, yes, that's fine. But in his nine starts, 2-2-2-2-1-2-1-1-1. His last three starts, like I said, Minnesota Wild, one goal against, and it was to Zach Bogosian. Florida Panthers, one goal against, and it was the first goal of the game. Then he locked it down and let the Avalanche come back and win in regulation. And then the third game back was the Montreal Canadiens, where a very bad breakdown and an odd man rush the other way beat him in the third period in a game where he almost had the shutout and then ended up losing in the shootout. But obviously the shootout doesn't count as a goal against. It's just the one goal against. Colorado was 0-for-3 on the penalty kill. Let's stay on the Blackwood trend here. They were 0-for-3 on the penalty kill against the... they were 0-for-3 on the power play, but they were 3-for-3 on the penalty kill and even scored a shorthanded goal. This is a stat that I got from Altitude TV postgame because I was watching the same feed as all of you, so you guys probably heard it as well. Mackenzie Blackwood's got a 967 save percentage on the PK since joining the Avs. So it's only a 10-game sample size, but just to kind of give you an idea of how crazy of a number that is, of all of the starters last year, the top in the NHL was Thatcher Demko, who, if you guys remember, was the runner-up for the Vezina Trophy behind Connor Hellebuyck. Thatcher Demko had a 917 save percentage on the PK. Mackenzie Blackwood's got a 967. Again, 10-game sample size. It is sure as shit not going to stay at that number. It's very possible that against the Winnipeg Jets, the Jets go 2-for-4 on the PP, and that 967 is down to like a 928. Like, it's very quickly can shift, but it is an outstanding number. And, it kind of adds to the thought that your best PKer is your goalie, and that's what Blackwood has been. I thought Josh Manson had a wonderful game, especially with Samuel Girard being injured and absent from the lineup. He was physical. He had that big hit on Marco Rossi, led to the Logan O'Connor goal in the opening period. And then in the third period, he obviously was the catalyst of the shorthanded goal, intercepting a pass and just like skating from one zone to the other so smoothly, so efficiently, so Kale McCarr-esque, and then sends a pass to Arturi Lehkonen, one timer, boom, shorthanded goal right past Filip Gustavsson. The opening goal from Logan O'Connor, his first one in 14 games, but in his last 12, he's got 5 points. 5 points in 12 games is about what you want out of Logan O'Connor. If he can give you 5 points every 12 games, you're looking at a player that's going to give you right around 35 points in a full season, and that's what you want. You want somewhere around that number for Logan O'Connor, even though right now he's a little bit behind that pace. That's around where you want him to be when all's said and done, especially given the contract extension he signed, $2.5 million. I do want to touch on Parker Kelly's goal. First of all, Filip Gustavsson was beat pretty easily on a lot of these shots. The Mikko Rantanen one, the Logan O'Connor one, the Parker Kelly one. So a lot of wristers beating him. And one-timers as well. But like clear looks for the goalie, challenging the shooter one-on-one. But speaking of the Parker Kelly one, like I thought it was a nice shot that he had there. And I truly don't believe there's a player on the Avalanche's roster that I have grown more fond of since opening night than Parker Kelly. He's won me over, like full stop. I thought in the beginning of the season and I thought after the 25, 26, 27 game mark that Parker Kelly was just another version of Freddie Olofsson, the guy who's going to center your fourth line all season until he's not because you brought in somebody better just in time for the playoffs and then never to be heard of from again. You know, not literal because Olofsson ended up leaving back to Europe. However, Parker Kelly's under contract for one more season. So maybe he comes back as a 13th, 14th forward, but I didn't expect him to be the guy. But he has won me over. I've grown a lot more fond of him. And I just wonder if the Avalanche could unlock a little bit more offense out of him. You know, it's crazy to say that. You know, he is 25 years old, which for a lot of players is like, this is what you're going to get. But it is crazy to say, throughout Parker Kelly's entire regular season, or NHL career, I should say, because he's never played in the playoffs anyway. Throughout his entire playoff career, he has already played 20% of his games with the Avalanche. That's how little experience he came in before playing these 43 games this season. So, really curious how that goes there. Jonathan Drouin re-enters the lineup, gets 2 assists. He's up to 10 points in 10 games. It is the most 24-25 Colorado Avalanche thing you can say. Guy comes back, has a couple points. Also, guy comes back, other guy goes out. That's kind of been the theme, especially for Drouin, man. It feels like every time this guy comes back, the Avalanche got to sacrifice another body from their lineup, whether it's Val Nichushkin, whether it's Sam Girard, so on and so forth. Mikko Rantanen became the third player to 60 points this season. Nathan MacKinnon was the first. Leon Draisaitl was the second. Draisaitl did it a couple of hours before Rantanen did. So he's in the top three, and you can start to see why he wants Leon Draisaitl money. He deserves it. It's just a matter of can the Avalanche do it. The reality for Mikko Rantanen, just to kind of touch into that a little bit, I'll do a lot more podcasting about his contract in the future, but the reality about Mikko Rantanen as compared to Leon Draisaitl is that there is only one name in Edmonton more important than Leon Draisaitl in terms of effectiveness and part of the team. For Mikko Rantanen, unfortunately for him, in Denver, there are two. There's Nathan MacKinnon, and there's, of course, Kale McCarr, who is going to blow past everybody's number in terms of salary. Last thing I want to touch on, Arturi Lehkonen, I mentioned he had a goal. He's got 15 goals now in 31 games and only 6 assists. Ross Colton, we all saw that beauty of a goal he had and the fun reaction to that goal. 26 games this season, 13 goals, only 2 assists. Val Nichushkin didn't play. You know, I've talked about Val, but first 3 games of the season coming back from his suspension, 0 points. The game that he got injured on New Year's Eve against the Jets, 0 points. The 17 games sandwiched in the middle, 11 goals. So he's got 11 goals in 21 games on the season, but truly 11 goals in a 17-game stretch, only 6 assists. Why do these guys have so few assists? Because Nathan MacKinnon's on pace for 101, which is more than the mark that we saw from Kucherov and McDavid last year when they both put up 100. So just a fun little tidbit there, a fun little stat there of what playing with Nathan MacKinnon does to some of these guys. So that was the game against Chicago, against Minnesota. In terms of the game against Chicago, I don't want to dig too deep into it because I think I touched on it pretty well. Juuso Parsonen had a beauty of a goal. The Avalanche dominated early and couldn't get another shot past Peter Mrazek, turned into a freaking Dominic Hasek-esque type of goalie in that game. And then the Blackhawks kind of claw back slowly but surely and get three goals on a backup goalie in Trent Miner, who did an admirable job, but, you know, let in as many goals as Blackwood has in his last three starts. So that's all pretty much to say about the Chicago game. I mentioned this last podcast that the Avalanche, you know, they had, well, what's the total number? I think it was five. Let me double check this. Terrible podcasting here. Sorry, six. The Avalanche, they started a stretch of six games in a row. Sorry, they started a stretch of 6 out of 12 games on New Year's Eve that are pretty much going to be tests. Three of those tests against the Winnipeg Jets, two against the Minnesota Wild, one against the Dallas Stars in a 12-game stretch. Since those 12 games, they have played 6, and only 2 of those have been the tests. The first test was the Jets on New Year's Eve. They won that game. The second test was the Minnesota Wild on Thursday. They blew them out in that game. Test number 3 comes against the Winnipeg Jets. Then you got 2 games to play the Oilers and the Rangers. And then you got tests 4, 5, and 6 against the Jets, Wild, and the Dallas Stars. These are all the teams that are ahead of them in the standings in the Central Division. I am so excited to see how they do in this stretch. I hope Scott Wedgwood's back at some point so he can play the Rangers game. And you can go from there and really ride Blackwood against these tough teams because you're going to need him. So I think that's it for now. You know, if you look at the Central Division standings, in 42 games, the Jets have 28 wins. The points don't really matter. Yes, they do, but there's also 30-something games left. 41, 42 for the Dallas Stars, to be exact. Colorado 53, Dallas 53, Minnesota 56, Winnipeg 58. Yes, all those teams have game in hand on the Avs. Minnesota and Winnipeg have 1, Dallas has 3. But in terms of outright wins, in 42 games, Winnipeg has 28. In 42 games, Minnesota has 26. In 40 games, Dallas has 26. In 43 games, Colorado has 26. This is why these tests are going to be so important. If you win one of the games against Winnipeg, the one against Minnesota, and the one against Dallas, and let's just say you lose the second one against Winnipeg, that's remaining 3 total, obviously, including New Year's Eve. You're looking at, you know, really starting to gain ground on these guys because, you know, the biggest issue with the Avalanche right now is every time they win a game, you look at the Central Division scoreboard, Dallas wins, Minnesota wins, Winnipeg wins. So when you're the team beating them, especially if you can continue to close these games out in regulation, it is a huge 2-game type of swing. It's a 4-point night. So big game on Saturday. Really excited to see how that goes. And then I'm pumped to have the Avalanche back at home for 5 straight, really fun, really big games. It's going to be great to see how they handle this stretch of 5 or 6 games. With that, I'm going to put an end to the show here. Hope you all enjoy your wonderful weekend and have fun watching the Avs on Saturday. Check out ColoradoHockeyNow.com. Subscribe to the email list, create an account, join the comments section. It is a ton of fun. Follow me on Twitter at RunRightArif. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out you.